if you drive a bike 300 kilometers an hour and you have this droplet every time on the same spot on your forehead, then it's quite painful, and that's what the blades also see.
Offshore wind energy has gone through tremendous developments in recent years. Innovation was a key driver for its success. If offshore wind wants to make a lasting contribution to the energy transition, the sector must continue to innovate. I am David De Jager of GROW, a consortium with a joint research program in offshore wind. In this podcast series, I want to give you an impression of the key research and innovations that will shape the future of offshore wind.
We're here at the Technical University of Delft, and I'm here with Harold van der Meijlen-Meijer. You're a senior consultant of wind energy technologies at TNO.
Yes, thank you, welcome.
Yeah. And with Julie Teuwe. She is an assistant professor in aerospace structures and materials of the university here. Hi, Julie.
Hello.
Thank you for having us here. We are going to talk about erosion of rotor blades, Harold, and better understanding of how to prevent that and maybe even control it or maybe even accept it in a smart way. Can you tell us what this project that you're doing here, it's called WindCore, what it's all about?
Yes, please. Now, like you said, the droplet erosion, also called water droplet erosion, is a big issue in the wind, because if it's high tip speeds and wind and rainy conditions, the leading edges of the blade start to degrade, and that is a loss of performance.
Why is water so damaging? To me, it sounds like, a rotor blade is made of a tough material, so how can it be so damaging? Is the impact of a water droplet so big?
This may be a bit physical, theoretical, but if you have, for instance, a hailstone, then it bounces on the surface and it still has energy if it bounces back. For a water droplet, it also bounces a little bit, but it gives a lot of energy to the surface. You have a sort of water hammering effect, they call it. So the energy impact is quite large with a water droplet hitting the surface with a large speed.
Yeah, and now I recall when I'm riding in a rain shower on my bike, then it can also be quite painful. And it's not because I'm riding that fast. It's because the rain and the wind is really hitting my face. And that you basically say because it transfers all the energy, well, into my face or into the rotor blade in that example.
It's a combination of things because it's... But if you drive a bike with 30 kilometers an hour, then expect that you drive 300 kilometers an hour and you have this droplet every time on the same spot on your forehead, then it's quite painful, and that's what the blades also see. So you want to mitigate by cycling lower speeds, or stop cycling anyway.
And that's the strategy that you're trying to research in this project. This optimum, either slowing down the rotor blade speed, and by that preventing maintenance costs.
Yeah, actually, you want to extend the time to incubation to first damage as long as possible. Yeah.
Because if this damage is occurring, then you will have a lower energy yield from your wind turbine.
Yes, and that's the project to try to find, sort of optimum, that you reduce the tip speed with still energy production, but with an acceptable lifetime of your blade.
I think later you will see a damaged rotor blade, and that's what you basically absolutely want to avoid. You want to be as soon as possible, prevent this first degradation of the rotor blade.
Yes, actually, my colleagues, aerodynamics, they want the blade as new, but there's always a problem with contamination. But when you have major damage, macroscopic damage we got, then it has influence on the airflow and the production of the energy.
And how much percentage is that about?
Yeah, it's difficult to give percentages because there's a lot of range in it, but they said up to 25%. That's quite
a
lot.
Terrible, yeah.
But if you already have 1.5-2%, that is quite a major loss for an operator of a wind farm.
So. And so what do they now do? They probably inspect the rotor blade regularly?
Yes, they inspect it, and like you said, there's a lot of development going on in wind turbines, so the rotor's getting larger and larger, now up to 100 meters length, And so the situation is still changing. The problem is getting more and more serious. And so that's why you have to inspect it regularly and try to be in time with your repair.
And if I recap it a little bit, so rain and hail cause damage to your rotor blade, and that impacts the energy production, and it increases your maintenance costs because you have to repair it. And your solution is, what if we reduce the speed of the rotor blades when it's raining, and especially when it's raining in the most damaging way? And with what kind of percentages the rotor speed will be reduced?
Now, that's also a very difficult question to answer because the percentages, but the relation to the speed is exponential. So it means if you have only a slight increase of your tip speed, then you already have a very large reduction in your time to incubation, time to damage. So I can't give a percentage now because it's very dependent on the type of wind turbine, the type of conditions, but it's significant. Yeah.
And by reducing the speed, you have less damage, but also less energy yield. So there will be a kind of trade-off between the two, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, actually, you want to use your blade for the full lifetime. It's about 20 or 25 years. So in the optimum, you have to, it must be damaged after 25 years. But you want to keep it as long as possible effective.
Yeah. And for these inspections, is that an easy thing to do? How does that look like?
Now, there are two different things. You have the inspections, of course, that you can do it with a drone from quite a distance. But then you have already macroscopic damage to detect. You can also use rope access, that when people climb in the tower and with ropes climbing down. And it's quite a lot of work because it's man work, it's expensive. And but the other thing is the repair, actually. If you find the damage, then you have to repair it. And you can't repair with a drone up to now, so you have to do it with rope access.
You mentioned that, okay, lower tip speeds will reduce the damage to the blades, but also the energy yield. So what's the trade-off? What is the overall impact on the cost of electricity that you produce with the turbine?
Actually, the impact is dependent also on the ultimate goal. And the ultimate goal is a maintenance-free blade. So you don't want to do any inspection and maintenance anymore. Now, with our model, and of course we made a lot of assumptions, and it's a very specific case that we see that we can reduce the LCE with 0.6%.
That sounds, so that's cost of the electricity that
cost
you produce?
Cost of electricity, yeah.
0.6%, it sounds like peanuts, like, well, why bother?
It sounds like peanuts, but as soon as you see what the cost of the production is of a 1 gigawatt wind farm, then it's really quite significant. And more important also is the reduction in maintenance cost. We see that with the same reduction, we have 1.4% reduction in maintenance cost.
I understand that, for the typical sized wind farms in the Netherlands of over 700 megawatt, it could even add up to 1 million euro savings per year.
Yes, definitely. Yeah,
so that's a lot of peanuts.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, and then I understand. Julie, you are the material expert here, but I think you also have an other trait, and that's you are also now a specialist in rainmaking. But I have a question on this rotor blades. Can't you improve the protection of a protection coating of a rotor blade? Aren't there options for that as well?
There certainly are. I know that the coating manufacturers are working really hard on finding good solutions for that. Of course, finding good solutions requires knowledge on the mechanisms and understanding the behavior of erosion itself. But there are dedicated systems that have been developed by coating manufacturers specifically for leading edge protection. So that's an extra coating on top of the coatings, the typical coatings that you see on wind turbine blades. Typically, you see that they're painted white. So that's the normal coating, but then they have a specific strip basically at the leading edge where erosion is most prominent, and that is specifically designed for the leading edge erosion. But still, with that coating, you get erosion. You see it after 1 year, sometimes after 5 years, but you see still erosion happening. So that's why it's still a big problem and why it's worth looking into it.
Yeah. Later, we will go to the basement where you will show me your rain machine. What's the idea of this rain machine?
So the idea behind the rain machine is that we can test different coating materials in a laboratory setting so that we can really control all the parameters that are relevant for leading edge erosion and that we can get more understanding of the mechanisms behind so that we can actually then, with that understanding, develop new coating materials or give pointers to the coating manufacturers. This is where you need to go if you want to develop a coating that will last.
And it can also help Harald to basically see, okay, where this optimum can be found.
Exactly. And that's also what we did in Windcore, is we eroded samples, tried to understand the roughness changes in the material itself, which is then important for the aerodynamic simulations to understand how much loss do you have.
Well, I suggest let's go downstairs and have a look at the rain jet machine. And great. See your magic with making rain. Julie, we are here in the basement with a rain machine, I believe it is, right?
Yes, it is called a pulsating jet erosion tester.
Okay. And what does this machine do?
So this is a machine that is especially designed to test coated samples. And it basically projects a raindrop onto the sample at a very high speed. And with that, we can then see how that creates erosion if you do that multiple times.
Okay, the alternative would be having a raindrop and then hit hard with it with a rotor blade, but that's in a way the other way around that you're trying to simulate in this machine.
Exactly. Yeah, so it's the same as we do with aerodynamics. When you have a wind tunnel, you also place the airfoil locally in the wind tunnel, but then the air moves around it. So it's a similar principle.
And how many rain droplets are you shooting at the test sample in a normal test?
In a normal test, we can select basically the frequency at which we test. So we have the option to go from, for instance, 5 hertz, so 5 raindrops per second, to 25 or 50 hertz. There's a whole range that we can select.
And the latter would be like a heavy rain, or?
That would be an extremely, extremely heavy rain.
Okay.
Because we try to, of course, do accelerated testing with this machine, because otherwise we would be testing for 2 years to get erosion, which is something that we, of course, do not want. We would like to get erosion way faster than what we would get in real life. So we test at higher frequencies, slightly higher velocities of raindrops. That's something that we also can change in the machine. The test setup, as you see right now, is for a perpendicular impact.
Yeah.
But we can also test at different angles, for instance, and we can change the droplet diameter.
All right. What would be the range of a rain droplet in real life?
So in real life, it depends on the intensity of the rain. So if it's very heavy rain, the mean diameter of a raindrop is about 2 millimeters, 2.5 millimeters, but there's a whole range. So it's really a probabilistic normal distribution. If you have light rain, then actually the diameter is way smaller.
And is it right to assume that the big droplets cause the biggest pain for the rotor blade?
That is true.
Okay, I'm glad I understand the principle.
Yes.
Yeah. And you're testing the material. Is it because you want to test the material, or is it really understanding how damage is being created with it?
We actually want to do both. So we want to understand the mechanisms behind it and really understand, like, okay, if we have these rain droplets hitting the surface, how can we assess then different coatings and which coatings behave different than the other ones and how different? So it's really about the understanding. But we initially used the machine as well to really understand how is erosion created, like how is damage initiated, but also how does damage progress? Because it's not always that easy to understand how it progresses, and that has to do with coating. So if you change the coating material, then your damage progression will be different as well.
Okay, and you have some test samples here.
Yes.
To be honest, it doesn't look that impressive. It's like just a small damage on the surface.
Yeah, correct.
Because that's basically, then you stop doing the test.
Yeah, so basically all these tests for the test samples that you see are test samples where we only test it until incubation time, which for erosion is one of the most important measures. Because that's when you see damage. And once you have damage, damage will grow and you will get performance losses. So what we wanted to understand is what is the incubation time of this coating material that you see here? And then when you see the first damage occurring, that's when we stop the test, because that's what we want to log. And still, although it doesn't seem like a big thing, you do see damage, and you actually can, under a microscope, if you look at it, you can see differences between different coatings, between different test parameters. So it's quite interesting to see, like, when damage initiates, how it initiates.
Yes, okay, I understand that. And indeed, that's what Harald told us before, you want to prevent this type of erosion from the beginning, because you want to avoid the big cracks that we saw at the rotor blades in the latter stage.
Exactly. And by understanding incubation time and how we can prolong that incubation time for as long as possible, that will of course change how we operate our wind turbines.
And is there already, can you say what coating or what type of material performs best?
That is still a big question mark, and that is something that still requires a lot of development and that we would like to work on in the future, of course.
Harald, so from the research that Julie here at TU Delft is doing, you basically know the impact of various rain speeds and frequencies and droplet size on samples. Is it then an easy job for you to predict how this is happening in real life? Do you know how much rain is falling at the North Sea? In what sizes and et cetera?
Yeah, now that's a very good question. When we started with the project, we thought that there was a big database available because we have special rain sensors. But it was measured for another purpose. It was for visibility or the amount of millimeters of rain. And in this case, we need the distribution and the size of the droplets. So that's why we had to look for historical data and also specific data. And with help of the KNMI, we made a database for an onshore situation.
That's the Dutch Meteorological Institute.
Yes, yeah. CERT. Yeah, and they set up a database based on their sensors. Yeah.
Okay. So you could construct kind of the profile of a rain shower at the North Sea and how that would statistically impact possibly a rotor blade.
Yeah, and the most important is from the combination of rain and wind. So we need to have these data simultaneously to have a good picture of what's a lifetime of impact from on blade.
Yeah, if it's raining but there is no wind, then the impact will be minimal.
No problem.
Yeah. So I also understand that you in fact need better statistics and data on the rain occurring on the North Sea. So what do we have plans to get better insight in that?
Yes, it's of course every project you create new questions. And in this case, it was the data about rain conditions. So we set up a new project. It's now in progress, just started. The project is called PROWESS, a precipitation atlas for the North Sea. And on strategic parts of the North Sea, we will do measurements during 1 or 2 years and collect all the data.
So basically, you are going to fix the data gap that you encountered at the beginning of WindCore by making this PROWESS atlas.
Yeah, exactly. And it's interesting for a future developer that they knows for a specific location of a wind farm and a specific type of wind turbine, what type of mitigating method he should invest in.
Yeah. In WindCore, you cooperate with several parties. Clearly, with Julie of the Technical University of Delft, and TNO together. You're doing the research, but there's also interest from industry partners. Which parties are involved?
Yeah, now we have the problem owners, and those are the operators. So we have two major operators. That's Shell and RWE. Another partner is Suslon, wind turbine manufacturer. They have a lot of input in their design materials for their blades.
I have a question to you, Julie. What is your educational background? How do you become a material expert or a rainmaker even?
So actually, I'm an aerospace engineer. So I looked at aircraft and decided that materials were very interesting from an aircraft perspective. But then for my master's thesis, I actually went into wind turbines, and that captured me a lot. And there was a lot to do on materials in wind turbine blades. And I always focused on that from the moment that I graduated. I did a PhD in new materials for wind turbine blades. I worked in industry where I actually worked with TNO also on an erosion-related topic, and saw the really big issues with erosion there. And then when I came back to academia, that was my main first focus. Let's see how that erosion develops, what the main mechanisms are, and then here we are.
And can you make a prediction? Harald mentioned that we need maintenance-free rotor blades. Will we get there, and if so, when?
That's a very good vision, and I believe that is very interesting to move forward in research. I believe with the current techniques and the techniques that we will develop, also on the sensors on blades, we could actually go towards a maintenance-free blade, that we at least get the triggers if something is wrong, then we can still go and repair things if necessary.
You sometimes hear about self-healing materials. Is that a solution for a rotor blade as well?
Well, for an entire rotor blade, that will probably not be the most ideal case. It is interesting, of course, if you look at coating materials. Like if you have that first incubation, the first damage on your blade, if we then have a self-healing coating that could repair itself and put it in the pristine state again, then we don't have that problem.
Yes. And Harald, what is your educational background?
My educational background is material scientist, so I've been working in the aerospace beginning on gas turbine blades for jet engines.
Okay.
And then worked for the Navy, and then I started to work on durability of systems, materials, and also operation maintenance. And I work now since 15 years in the offshore wind business within TNO.
We had a question from Marco Pavlovic, and let's hear his question.
Well, we are both investigating composites, and the difference is that in my research I'm focusing on foundations and supporting structures. In your research you're focusing on blades and development. And my question would be, how can we join our research data and findings to make an added value?
Yeah, a good question. I definitely think that our researchers can benefit from each other because we're both looking at composite materials and behavior of composite materials. Whether you wrap it around a node or you look at a wind turbine blade and how it's constructed, there's always benefit in sharing information on the specifics of that.
Okay, so insights from the top of the wind turbine can help to improve the behavior of the bottom of a wind turbine, and probably also vice versa. So, Julie and Harald, you've just told us that the project is about avoiding this early stage of damage. Maybe you can show me how a blade looks like if it really goes wrong. Harald, we are here in the aerospace laboratorium and standing next to an old rotor blade, and this has deteriorated too long, too far. I can see. What do I see here?
It's a very old blade. It's a blade used for an onshore. And you see a major damage on the tip section. And the tip section, it's cut off, it's about 7 meters. And you see that not only the coating has been disappeared, but also it's the damage of the composite material below. And that's not tolerated at all.
Yeah. So this really has gone too far. And this is what you will absolutely want to avoid also onshore, but definitely in offshore situations.
Yes, you already want to avoid that the airflow is disturbed. So that's the first effect of damage. But in this case, also the structural integrity of the blade has been affected by pits in the glass fiber.
In the show notes, you will see a link to the website, and there you can see some pictures of the blade that we're talking about. The blades on the outer end has the highest tip speeds, and at the nacelle, it's almost standing. Well, there's 0 meter per second wind speed. Can you see that also on the blade about the damage?
Yes, so that's why we don't have a. If we have some blades to investigate, we have the full range from impact speed, from maximum tip speed to almost zero. So yeah, like you said, this is very valuable. So we don't want to see only the macroscopic damage. It looks interesting on the picture now, but we want to see, like Julie showed on the samples, these initial very small pits, and that's already a critical section.
Well, Harald and Julie, thank you very much for having me here today. I've learned a lot about erosion, and well, I'm looking forward to the results of PROWIS and maybe a follow-up of WindCore.
The research presented in this podcast series is supported by TKI Wind op Zee and the Netherlands Enterprise Agency. Would you like to learn more about this research? Check out the show notes, where you'll find a reference to the Grow2Go web magazine.
The next episode of this Grow2Go podcast will be about the gentle driving of piles, a new technology to have a silent way to install monopiles in offshore situations.